Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host Ringside Robert and England's adopted son, Joe Habib. And we have a great show for you tonight. And as usual, you can catch us on ringsidereporter.com. If you want to call and ask questions, you can call now at 323-870-3857. We're going to be here till 9 o'clock tonight. We're a little bit short tonight. Got a late start. We're going to leave early. That's how I roll. Today, we're going to talk about Andre Ward retires from boxing. I was shocked when I heard this, so we'll tell you the story here. Gervonta Davis lands himself in our train wreck of the week after being arrested. And Daniel Jacobs commits career suicide by signing with Eddie Hearn. But first, we get started with HBO Jorge Linares versus Luke Campbell. Jorge Linares wins a very close decision over Luke Campbell on Saturday in the Forum in Inglewood, California. Scores were 115-113 for Campbell and 114-113 and 115-112 for Linares. Razor-thin decision. Luke Campbell was knocked down in the second round, and that would prove to be the difference in the fight. It was a good combination that put him down, too. Linares seemed to win about three. He looked like he won about the first three rounds. Campbell started coming in a little bit slower, and over the course started leveling the playing field and everything. Campbell fought very well. I don't understand people that thought like Luke Campbell was coming here for like it's going to be like a squash where Linares is just going to roll over him. Kind of looked like that early, but certainly didn't end up like that. I thought Campbell was going to win this fight, man. I thought he had a real shot at winning this fight before he came in. B, what were your thoughts on this main event here?
This fight was a firecracker of a fight. I thought it was very competitive in spots. Big thing here was the great advantage in hand speed from Linares, and I thought he had a little bit more pop in his shots. The thing that Campbell was doing was he kept the jab going. He never abandoned the jab. He used it as a defensive weapon as well as an offensive weapon. So even after he was getting hit with shots, he kept, touching Linares to try to keep him off balance a little bit and offset that speed a little bit and, stop him from being so aggressive. And another good thing that Campbell did was he did not allow his back to stay up against the ropes for too long. He tried to keep this fight in the center of the ring for as long as he could. And, he was just throwing shots, just basically scoring blows. Every now and then, he would step in there with a hard straight left. But a good punch that was really successful for him was that sneaky little check right hook that he was able to get over Linares' jab every now and then. As Linares would cock it back, the right hook would come right over the top of it. So Campbell is definitely a tough competitor. He came to win. I thought he almost did win. I had him losing by the slightest of margins. I had Linares winning 114-113. I thought Linares got a little bit tired in spots, but again, we have to give Campbell credit. Campbell, kept landing those body shots. So even when Linares would roll off a quick, flashy combination, Campbell was still there, landing a shot here and there. Like, in other words, there was in these exchanges, Campbell always, left something, left Linares catching something on his way out after the combination or in between the combination. But Linares was more steady. He fought a more consistent pace, and he landed the cleaner blows, and he landed the harder blows, and he was able to push Campbell back. But that's not to say that Campbell did not have his moments. But Campbell just couldn't land that one big punch to turn this fight around. And that was the big difference. If he was able to sit down on his punches a little bit more or land something to get Linares' attention to stop that momentum, then this fight could have been a little bit differently. But again, credit Campbell. but a dogged, determined fight. And I thought he made a good account of himself. And both of these guys made a good impression on me. At the end of this fight, I say to myself, I'd love to see these guys fight in a rematch, possibly. Or I'd just love to see these guys fight. Period, against whoever. So it was just a great fight.
Do you think there'll be a rematch in this fight, or do you think Linares is going to try to get Garcia or whatever?
If he can't get Garcia, then why not do this again? Who else could he fight?
I would like to see it again. I thought it was both guys. I mean, and Luke Campbell is no joke, man. He can fight.
Yeah.
What did you think, Robert?
Me and Beeb must have been watching the same fight because my scorecard was exactly the same, 114-113 for Linares. I gave Luke Campbell a real good shot at winning this fight, and the only difference on my scorecard is because of the knockdown. If Linares didn't knock him down in the second round, Luke Campbell wins this fight on my scorecard. I thought it was a real good fight. Campbell got off to a slow start. I don't know if he was nervous because this is his first title shot or what, but the first three rounds, Linares dominated. After that, the fight kind of broke out and picked up and was pretty competitive. I would definitely like to see this again. And with Linares winning, he becomes the mandatory challenger for Mikey Garcia if Garcia hangs on to his title that he's got. So that's why everybody's talking about Mikey Garcia. But Mikey Garcia, I don't know if he's delusional or what, because I read an article on Friday. He wants to go after Miguel Cotto. The last fight he had was at 140, and he wants to go to 154 and fight Cotto. I don't know if he can handle that much weight. You guys are good. Speak on that better than I can, but I don't think so.
Let's talk about that for a second. I mean, let me ask you this first, Robert. If Linares, like I said, if Linares can't get Mikey Garcia, would you like to see a rematch with Luke Campbell?
Absolutely. Luke Campbell deserves it.
What happened? I mean, yeah, I agree with you too.
Yeah. Well, Oscar said in the paper that I read today that he's going to talk to Linares about possibly going up to 140. So I don't know what Oscar's thinking. I think the Campbell rematch is a good thing. De La Hoya is going to do what he wants, I guess.
Do you think, or let's talk about Mikey Garcia for a minute, because you mentioned something real interesting that he talked about going up to fight Miguel Cotto. Do you think, let's say, even if it was a catchweight, let's say he goes up to 154. As a fighter going up and down in weight, doesn't that hurt you? Cause then he's got to shrink back down to 140. You know what I mean? It's just, he's kind of out of his weight class. Is that good or bad for him? I'll pose the question to both of you guys.
In my opinion, Eric, it's horrible because number one, he's got a real title at 135. If he no longer wants to be at the division, he should give it up. He should focus on 140 and maybe later on move to 147. I mean, his last fight against Broner, he was 140 pounds, and now he's talking about putting on 14 more pounds. That's gaining 17 pounds from where you won your last title fight. I don't think it's healthy at all.
Not a big fan of it either. They must think Cotto is completely shot, or Garcia, when I say they, I mean Team Garcia. They must think that Cotto is completely shot, and he may be past it a little bit, but the guy is not completely shot yet. He can still fight a bit. Gennady Golovkin slipped, Cotto slipped, but these guys are not anywhere near being shot. So if they're underestimating where Miguel Cotto is in his career, then that could be a big problem because Miguel Cotto is very heavy-handed, but he's also a very good boxer as well. He knows how to fight. This isn't just some crude slugger that you're going to be going in there with, and this isn't some guy that's just going to throw one punch at a time. Miguel Cotto will fight a pressure fight against you. He will make you fight every second of the round, And it's not going to be like the same fight you had with Broner, where Broner was able to, you know, fight in spurts and, you know, pick and choose and basically lost the fight because he just didn't do enough and he got outworked. You're not going to have that same type of fight against the Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto is a totally different animal. So if you're going in this thinking that Miguel Cotto is a shot fighter, then that's a big mistake. Why not work your way up to 147? You know,
maybe have one at
135 and then go to 140 and do it gradually. What's the rush?
Yeah.
No rush.
Don't get me wrong. I like Mikey Garcia as a fighter, but this is, I've never read anything so ridiculous. I don't know who would be thinking up this ridiculous plan. And remember, Mikey Garcia does not have an official promoter, and he's told everybody, anytime I fight, I'm going to fight on Showtime. Number one, how is he going to get the Cotto fight? Because Cotto's with Golden Boy. They want to have it on HBO. I think this whole idea is ridiculous. You either go down to 135 and defend your title and keep it, or you give up your title and go to 140 and do what you can there, and then later on move up to 147. This is such a ridiculous idea. You know, yeah. I just don't approve of it at all.
I think it's silly, and I hope it's just a hype job. It's just something to get his name out there and stuff like that, because, yeah, hopefully they don't bite on this. It's always bad when he goes up, and when you go up in weight like that, you don't, you know, it's just, it's not good for him, because he's got to come again. He's got to come back down to the weight. He's still got a belt at 135, and he's fighting one. Come on, man. It's, you know,
give
let's
me
be
a
real.
Break.
Right. It can't be that much money, because Cotto's not getting that much money. There you go. Also, too, on HBO last night, there was a replay of the Triple G Canelo fight. Just some final thoughts on that. I didn't score it, of course. I've watched the fight a couple of times since then. I scored it once, and that what I had is what I had, 116, 112, I believe, for Triple G. Nothing really changed my mind. I mean, it was a great fight. It was a great fight. What I didn't like, though, was at the end, and we were talking about this, before we came on. Max Kellerman says, well, they really tried to minimize the scorecard, the Adelaide Bird scorecard. And Max says, well, it was 118 to 110. You know, it really wasn't a bad scorecard. And there was no, you know, what difference does it make? Even if she had Canelo win, well, it does make a difference. You know, Robert, what were your thoughts on the second time you watched it? And I don't know, what it again, or if you saw it any different or.
No. The only round I would have changed after watching it again would have been the fourth, but, you know, I didn't score it again. I'm happy with the scorecard I had. If I would have changed the fourth round, I would have ended up with a draw. So, you know. But what I didn't like about what Kellerman said, he said, well, Harold scored 116, 112. Harold had a scorecard like Adelaide Bird's. I mean, he couldn't understand why everybody was so upset. Well, Harold Lederman is getting paid by HBO to do the scoring, and he scores it the way he sees it. But don't try to compare Harold Lederman's scorecard to Adelaide Bird's. I mean, give me a break. Now, ironically enough, during this whole process, when they were talking about the scoring, both on the fight telecast and after, when they had the fight game on, they never once asked Harold Lederman's opinion on what he thought of the score. They left him completely out of the picture, which tells me he probably did not like the way she scored the fight, and HBO didn't want to air that.
Well, it could be, too. He didn't want to come out against her, too. I mean, that's a tough thing, especially for a judge to pile on. Judge, because you know yourself, you have a bad night, you know, so it's difficult for you, especially with, you know, them doing the same thing. I know Letterman's retired, but
what's lost in the shuffle here is Don Trell is scoring that seventh round for Canelo.
It was nonsense.
I mean, so this was just a bad night all around. There was scoring errors. That was the most decisive round for Golovkin, and Don Trell has scored it for Canelo. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I know.
So, Kellerman's wrong. If this fight wasn't properly, then Golovkin would have won. But again, I don't hate it. I'm not against anyone saying, okay, I gave Canelo the first three and I gave him the last three, or I gave him the first three and I gave him two of the last three, and maybe I gave him the fourth, or I gave him the ninth or something like that. I don't know. But I thought rounds 5 through 8 pretty much were Clay Golovkin rounds. You want to give Canelo's 6 rounds, you want to give him 7 rounds. I disagree, but I don't hate it. You know what I'm saying? It's not egregious. But given Canelo the 7th round and this 10-2, yeah. I mean, let's just call it for what it is. Yeah. Not even try to minimize it in any way. Anyone trying to minimize it?
It's almost as bad as – it's almost like, you know, Nevada decided, you know what, we're going to score it this way so we can make some more money in the rematch. That's almost what it looks like, you know, with Don Trella giving Canelo the 7th round and Adelaide Bird having her card the way she had it. It's almost like they went into it, well, we're going to make sure that we get a rematch out of this so Las Vegas can make more money, you know.
You know, you almost, when you look at it, and Beebe, you're right. I mean, when you look at it, you're almost like, you know, more irritated with Trella's scorecard, you know, because that 7th round was so clear. And
so clear.
Adelaide Bird, you know, I mean, she scored a 10-2, and it's like, what are you doing? But Don Trella, like, dude, you gave him that 7th round. That was the round. You know, there's no way, you know, in my opinion, it's like, I don't know how you could have gave Canelo that 7th round. I mean, even Adelaide Bird got that one right, you know.
From my understanding, nothing's going to be done about it. They're still sticking to the story that, yes, she had a bad night.
So. She had a bad – what about Trella? Trella had a bad night, too. Nobody says nothing about that.
I think he had a horrible night, too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like I said, I mean, when you start looking at this and you start thinking, you know, if, you know, the conspiracy theories and everything, you start thinking about that, and you're like, well, I'm more apt to look at Trella's card because he at least kept it close. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
It is what it is.
That's it. Nothing you can do. And hopefully they'll agree to a rematch in May. But I don't know. We'll see. The World Boxing Super Series was also this weekend. Yunier Durticos versus Dmitry Kudryashov. The fight took place stateside in San Antonio, Texas. And absolutely zero coverage in the United States. Zero TV coverage. The World Boxing Super Series is well into the tournament. Zero fights have been televised. This is for the Muhammad Ali Trophy. You know, the winner gets, you know, I don't know, what is it, $60 billion or something crazy. They get a big sum of money. This big tournament is going on. Absolutely nobody knows about it because they're not televising it. I don't understand, and I guess, Robert, you said that some TV deal, you were talking about it last week, the TV deal with Showtime fell out of place because, you know, they didn't get paid. That tends to happen.
They didn't get paid. They didn't get paid, so they pulled out. Thank you, Richard Schaefer.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So don't know what to say about that, but I did see the fight. I believe it was on Facebook Live, and then you can catch it on YouTube and stuff like that. I tell you what, Durticos looked really good in this fight. He really impressed me. The fight ended in the 2nd round with a monster right hand that caught Kudryashov flush on the chin. He beat the count, but was clearly in no condition to continue. The fight was shown on Facebook Live. You know, I tell you what, this started as a great idea, but with lack of coverage, man, this is really falling apart here. But back to the fight here. Durticos hit this guy with a solid right hand. He squared up, busted him right in the jaw. I mean, it was just picture perfect. I mean, it was like a textbook right hand and laid him out. I mean, just sprawled the guy out, man. It was amazing. He looked really good in this fight, man. I was very impressed with him. We will hopefully see him again. Hopefully we'll see him on TV and I don't have to go look him up on YouTube. But there you go. So Durticos advances in the tournament that absolutely nobody's watching.
Well, I can't.
Huh?
I was going to say, I can't blame Showtime. If you don't get paid, if you make a deal, but yet you don't get the financial thing you're promised, I don't blame them for backing out of it, Eric. I blame this all on Richard Schaefer.
Right. What do you think? They're the, for the love of the sport. They're trying to get paid. You know, I mean, no, they're not going to, you know, exactly. You're 100% right, man. Yeah. If they don't get paid, then yeah, I don't blame. I wouldn't post it either, you know?
Right.
Across the pond in Manchester, Joseph Parker versus Huey Fury for the WBO heavyweight championship. Joseph Parker beat Huey Fury via majority decision on Saturday night in Manchester, England. Parker was the aggressor throughout the fight. However, he didn't really land many effective shots. He had a lot of trouble cutting off the ring. When I say a lot of trouble cutting off the ring, means he couldn't cut off the ring. He had trouble landing some meaningful shots. Fury, let's face it, doesn't do much either. I mean, he stayed on the outside, used his jab, but landed really nothing meaningful. Let's put it this way. It wasn't the most exciting fight you'll see. It's a fight the American Medical Association would love. Final scores for the fight were 114, 114, a draw, 118 to 110 on two cards for Joseph Parker. After the fight, Huey Fury's promoter, Mick Hennessey, said he's going to file an appeal on the decision. He talked about it on TV, on BBC Five. He said that this is corruption at the highest level in boxing. I thought it was an absolute masterclass, shades of Ali. Parker wasn't even in the fight. One of the worst decisions I've ever seen. And I'm here to tell you, Mick Hennessey, you are 100% wrong, my man. And hopefully it doesn't cost any money to file an appeal because you're going to lose that. Beeb, you saw the fight. What did you think of this?
Let me see if I can pull up my scorecard here, because I vehemently disagree with Mick Hennessey, because I scored this fight 116 to 112 for Joseph Parker. I think Fury did okay with the jab and spots. Once in a while, he landed an uppercut. Once in a while, he landed a right hand. But the operative word here is once in a while. You don't win a fight by doing things once in a while. now, again, was Joseph Parker's work beautiful? Was it textbook? Is it something that I'm going to show someone, you know, that's learning how to box? No. But he was forcing the action. You know, he was pressing Fury up against the ropes, pushing him back. And, you know, a lot of the shots he landed, they were partially blocked, but they were still getting through somewhat. And, you know, Fury just didn't do anything. You know, he decided that he was just going to stay there and throw jabs and just be content to throw a jab. Why not follow up the jab with the right hand? Why not throw combinations? Sitting there trying to touch. And, you know, Joseph Parker started picking up the jab after a while, too. So I don't think that this was controversy at all. On my card, I gave Parker the first round. I actually gave Fury the second, third, and fourth. And I gave Fury the 10th round. I gave him four rounds. If I wanted to, I possibly could have given him maybe the 9th. But I didn't. I thought Parker edged it. So at the very least, this is a 7-5, 8-4 fight, in my opinion, for Parker. That's not to say, he lit the world on fire, but he was the guy throwing punches. And he actually started landing his left hook a little bit, and he started landing his looping right hand. And he was going to the body. Not all the shots were landed, but they were still partially getting through. And Fury just wasn't doing enough. He just wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there, trying to keep this fight at a distance. But then, you know, when Parker did get inside, Fury just tried to hold him, and he wasn't so successful at holding him all the time either. He made no attempt to try to, you know, fight Parker. Made no attempt to try to land anything big to stop that forward momentum. He was just happy staying on the outside, throwing the jab periodically, and then when. You know, Parker got up close. He tried to grab him. And Parker did a great job of breaking free of the clinch. And he kept moving his hand. One guy kept moving forward. One guy kept throwing punches. And one guy kept moving his hands on the inside while the other guy was throwing a periodic jab. And very sparse was the right hand. Very sparse was the uppercut. So I'm not going to give the guy the fight because he lands a punch here or there. You know, you got to be somewhat consistent in this game to win the fight, especially if you try to, you know, win a title. You have to fight with some sense of urgency.
And that's how you win the fight. You keep moving your hands. You know, yeah. I mean, you don't move your hands. You play, you know, you're not going to win the fight just playing defense.
I'm sorry. I just, I don't see what all the controversy is about.
Yeah, a lot of people have said Georgie's going nuts in the chat. He thought Fury was nuts, robbed.
I'm not giving the guy, and I'm from the UK, man. I wanted Fury to win. But
I wanted Fury to win, too. I couldn't give it to him, though. Yeah, I agree.
Right? I couldn't give it to him.
No way. He did nothing, man. He did next to nothing. I mean, and like I said, I mean, at least one guy was trying to make the fight. You had one guy trying to make the fight. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
I mean, at the very least, I think we could give Fury 4 rounds, maybe 5. That's about it. I mean, people are telling me 10-2. I just don't see it, man.
No.
I don't see it.
10-2.
10-2 for Fury?
Who's scoring that? Adelaide Byrne?
Oh, my God.
Adelaide Byrne and CJ Ross scoring that fight, son.
I'm sorry. I don't see the controversy.
No. I don't either. It's pretty decisive.
And who else? And who else, too? Who's the other British announcer that had it, Parker, too? Who the hell was... Oh, I'm trying to remember who it was. But he had it for Parker, too. I was watching the fight, and a couple people had it for Parker, and I think one of the guys had it for Fury, but he was giving Fury rounds that I thought he clearly lost. You know what I'm saying? Like Fury would land one combination, like one punch, and boom, he automatically won the round. I don't know.
Yeah. I heard the Queen of England even scored it for Parker, so I don't know what you guys were watching. Yeah.
I don't remember the announcer's names, but I can't stop my head.
Yeah, it was pretty cut and dry, man, I thought. But where does Parker, let's talk about where they go next, man, because I think Huey Fury is still a good fighter. I think he might have a fight there. His style is tough. His style is a tough thing because aggression beats that style. Because he doesn't have a lot of power, aggression will beat that style. And a work rate will
puncher.
Beat that
he's
style.
Not a big puncher,
right. And a work rate will beat that style. So he's got to go back. He's got to figure something out. But as far as Joseph Parker, where does he go from here?
Well, he better stay away from Wilder. He better stay away from Joshua.
Anybody good?
Better stay away from Tony Bellew. I don't know, man.
That's where Tony Bellew needs to go.
I think Andre Ward can beat Joseph Parker.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's sick. That's sick to say. But I think he should have at least fought either Tony Bellew or Joseph Parker before he retired.
I thought he should have fought. I mean, Parker would have been a better fight, but Parker's a big guy. I mean, let's not take it away. I mean, you're talking about 175.
Not a huge guy, though. Not a huge guy.
Was he 220? And what's Ward?
About Johnny Ruiz size.
He's about 220. Ward's, so.
Ward's 6 feet.
It's a lot
Ward's
of
about
weight.
6 feet.
It's a lot of weight, man. I don't know.
Roy Jones, Johnny Ruiz all over again.
Yeah, but let me tell you what, Andre Ward is no Roy Jones. He's not, he doesn't have that. That's not his style. Like Jones, we knew had a chance. He had a real good chance because he can go in and out and he's fast. And that's not Ward's game, man. That's not Ward's game.
Ward is a more accurate puncher. Faster.
Yeah, but he's not going to be strong.
I don't know, man.
That's a tall one.
This guy, Ward, I've seen him. Well, you know what the thing is this? Maybe an older Ward that doesn't move as much, it makes the fight more interesting. Remember how Ward fought Kessler in the Super 6, how he went in and out and he moved very well in that fight?
Yeah,
He'd have to employ that type of style against Parker. And I'm curious to know or see at this stage of his career if he could move like that, which possibly he may not. So that may make the fight difficult.
Not only that, the extra weight. Just the extra weight alone.
Ward comes in at about 190, 190, 195. Well, I think Ward would come in at about 190, 195. And then Park comes in at 220. I don't know.
That's a tough one, man. I think that, like, I think Ward would probably come in around 200 pounds, try to be light. But, again, you're still carrying – was it 25 pounds extra weight? Yeah, it's 20, 25 pounds, 30. Yeah, that's tough, man. That's a tall order.
No, I didn't say Ward was Igloo. You misunderstood what I said. I said Ward is faster and more accurate than Parker. I didn't say he was faster and more accurate than Jones. You misconstrued what I said.
Yeah, I think that, that'd be a tall order. But I tell you what, Tony Bellew, I think he beats Tony Bellew. But it's a non-fight, though. You know what I mean? It's not a fight that anybody's going to go out of their way to see. And that's, I think that was, and we'll talk about this more later on, but I think that's what, when you talk about Ward and everything like that, that there was nothing there for him. So, all right, let's talk about ESPN main event. Robert, I'm going to ship this over to you. Oscar Valdez versus Genesis Cervania. Valdez wins a unanimous decision 116-110, and then 119-111 on one scorecard, 117-109 on the other scorecard. So unanimous. Robert, what'd you think of Valdez?
I like Valdez, but this is the first fight that I saw him where he obviously needs to work on some defense. He got hit with some shots that he shouldn't get hit with. And in this fight, I don't know if either one of you watched this, but every time he threw a punch, he leaned into it. And every time he leaned into it, that's how he got knocked down in the fourth round. He leaned into his punch, and as soon as he leaned in, the other guy was able to clip him and put him down in the fourth round. And he kept doing that throughout the fight. I guess his mandatory is now, after this win, is Carl Frampton. And guess what? The Jackal is going to have fun with that weakness. If that fight happens, you can mark Carl Frampton as the overwhelming favorite and winner because, boy, he'll expose that all day long. He's a good fighter, but he got lucky here. And I've never seen him look so bad defensively. I guess you guys didn't get to see this?
Yeah, I didn't catch this one. No, I didn't catch it. I didn't catch the ESPN card. I didn't catch the ESPN card at all. I saw highlights of the Ramirez fight.
I saw the knockout. But I ended up missing the first. But...
Yeah, well, I saw the knockout of Michael Collins.
If you get a chance to go back and look at this, you'll see it clearly. And he kept doing it throughout the night. He got lucky to come out with a win. And like I said, they kept talking afterward that his mandatory now was Frampton. Good luck with that. He ain't gonna beat him.
All right, so let's talk about the Gilberto Ramirez versus Jesse Hart. Ramirez wins a unanimous decision, 115-112 on two scorecards, 114-113 on the other. Hart was down in the second round. He was hurt pretty bad. He managed to survive the round. Round four, he was in trouble again, managed to pull it together, get out of the round, and pulled it together, and was able to finish the fight at the end of the day. Just wasn't enough. Beeb, talk to me about Gilberto Ramirez. I know you're a big fan of his. You like what he can do in the ring. You like his power. You like him, man.
This was an extremely entertaining fight. This is what you call comprehensive, effective pressure and aggression. You know, Ramirez is throwing that jab to the body, to the head. And this is the thing. You know, you can argue Jesse Hart. You can't even really argue. You can say Jesse Hart's quicker, maybe more athletic, a little slicker, a little craftier than Ramirez. But this is the thing about Ramirez. Ramirez has impeccable timing. And one big aspect of his game that's going to be hard to deal with is the variety of punches he throws and the way he mixes up the attack constantly changes the look. This is a tall, lanky guy who's not afraid to bend his knees and get low and throw that jab to the body and come back up to the head. This is a guy that is not afraid to get inside and fight in the trenches and throw those short shots and you know, be effective on the inside. Now, one thing that I don't like is sometimes when he's on the inside, does it after he throws a combination, he stays there instead of pivoting out or sliding off to the side. That's one little thing he does wrong. And at points in this fight, Jesse Hart made him pay for it. So when he's on the outside, he does move his head pretty well, throws the feints, but again, throws that jab up and down, throws it off speed. And another beautiful thing that he does is he'll change the trajectory of his punch just a tad bit enough to loop around the guard and thread that needle and get that punch in there. He's not a guy that's going to over-accentuate anything he does. His technique is deliberate, and it's to the point. He doesn't wing shots. Throws those straight punches right down the middle. There's no arc or there's no torque in him. And then when he goes to the body, he has a slight little loop, just enough to get those punches in. He's not like Antonio Margarito throwing those wide swinging blows. And he's not like Ricky Hatton, you know, torquing the punches. This guy may not be the fastest guy in the world, but he is very fluid and he has excellent technique. And he can just, you know, adjust his punches just enough where he can, you know, really open up his opponent and really give him that little bit of space, and he can adjust that punch just enough to get it through. He has a wide array of punches that he throws, and this guy is in phenomenal shape, and he was relentless, and this was just a beautiful fight to watch. And take nothing away from Jesse Hart, too. Jesse Hart did some good things here, too. You know, Ramirez was coming forward, and Jesse Hart would kind of slide over, make those half step to the side, just slip over and come right over the top with his right hand counters. He threw some really good right hand counters in this fight. And, you know, he was pretty slick in there, but he just had a hard time dealing with that constant pressure and that constant body attack of Ramirez. But again, you know, he was very slick and smooth towards the middle to the end of this fight with his counters. After a shaky start, you know, the first three rounds, I think, you know, he's a little shaky. He actually won the first round, but then the, you know, second, third, and fourth, and fifth, a little shaky. And then he started kind of finding his way with the counters a little bit. He started timing Ramirez just a little bit. And, you know, maybe Ramirez may have got a tad bit tired, but Ramirez got his second win. And this 12th round was classic. I mean, Jesse Hart, you know, just waited and started timing Ramirez coming in, made that little slip. Boom, coming over the top with the right hand. And he was really landing some good counter punches. And, you know, even he was making a concerted body attack as this fight wore on, too. So this was just a great fight. I actually had this fight 7-5. But, you know, with the knockdown, I had it 115-112. Very, very, very competitive fight. Jesse Hart started making the adjustments, started timing the jab a little bit, started timing, you know, Ramirez's forward momentum and tried to catch him coming in. And both guys were landing good uppercuts as well. But the big difference is the adjustment that Hart was making. He just slid over and was able to time that jab, and he came over, time that left hand, and came over the top with it. So this was just a great fight, man. It was an awesome fight.
Yeah, Jesse Hart's a really good fighter, too. This was not like a cakewalk, man. This was he's a really, really good fighter. So this was a really good performance for Ramirez.
Yeah.
And Michael Conlan continues his winning ways over Kenny Guzman. Conlan wins via second round KO over Guzman. Conlan looks pretty good in this fight, man. Highlights and everything like that. He looks pretty good, man. It looks like he's starting to get his legs under him, his sea legs under him, so to speak. He's looking better each outing. I think he's going to be good. I hope they don't rush him. I hope they give him
and
time.
He'll be on the undercard of the Lomachenko fight in December.
Yeah, they're keeping him busy. They're getting him the right opponents and everything like that. I think that's good. That's what he needs. And he's a project. You know, he's not going to be like a Lomachenko who fights for a title in the second pro fight. He's a project.
Right.
And as long as they build him up, keep him going, I think he's going to be a champion. I think he's going to be a good one. So that would be really good. Really good stuff. All right, let's talk about the upcoming fights here. And not many to speak of here. So let's go. We have a Tuesday night on the 26th, September 26th, Tuesday from Las Vegas, PBC on Fox Sports 1. Edward Ramirez versus Ledwan Barthelemy, 10 rounds featherweights. And Alejandro Salinas versus Dewan View, 8 rounds junior lightweights. On Thursday from Louisville, Kentucky on CBSSports.net, Tokakon Clary versus Broilio Rodriguez, 10 round featherweights. And Duke Micah versus Mario Diaz, 10 rounds, bantamweights. Can't wait to not watch that. From Huntington, New York, I don't know if it's going to be televised, but Cletus Seldon is going to face Ronald Garrido. And those are welterweights. And Cletus Seldon's always a lot of fun. Good fighter. So let's see here. And on December 30th on ESPN Deportes, that's Saturday, right, Robert?
Yeah, that's September 30th, not December.
I thought I said September. I'm sorry. September 30th, Deportes, Gary Spike O'Sullivan with Nick Quigley, 10 rounds middleweights, and that'll be on ESPN Deportes. Again, from Latvia, Maris Bridas versus Mike Perez, part of the World Boxing Super Series, 12 rounds for Bridas's, WBC cruiserweight title. Krzysztof Glowacki is going to be on there versus Leonard Bruzies, and that's 10 rounds cruiserweights. Again, not televised. World Boxing Super Series, not televised. So catch it somewhere, hopefully.
Before we get off of the TV topic, we got to rain all over ESPN's parade because their Friday night performance was pathetic. I had to cancel my DVR because they kept moving it to three different channels. If their ratings are low on this card, it's because the idiots kept moving it around. Look, I know you're the worldwide leader in sports, and I know you have contracts to fulfill, but don't schedule a boxing card on a Friday night if you don't have the room to put it on somewhere. I mean, they started it on ESPN News, they moved it to ESPN2, and then they finally put it on ESPN. I mean, come on, people. If you're gonna make a 4-year deal with a major promoter and you're gonna give him a date to use, then make sure he's got a platform that he can put it on. That was ridiculous.
You know, and it's not the first time it's happened. It's happened every fight. You know, whether it's the Little League World Series or whether it's Dancing Stars or whatever ESPN does. I mean, it's ridiculous. It happens every single fight. And I guess the only reason Top Rank doesn't complain about it is because they're getting paid, you can put it on whenever station you want, make people change. But for somebody who wants to watch the fights, it's very annoying. Why don't you just put it on ESPN2 or something like that, or just have it, I don't care what ESPN you put it on, but just put it on something. It's like, come on, man.
And look, we all have lives. We can't sit around and flip through channels. I mean, if you program your DVR and you're not going to be home, when you go to sit down to watch it, you're going to be fucking pissed off because you're taping something that you didn't want to tape. I mean, give me a break. Your DVR can't change itself.
Wouldn't it be awesome wouldn't that be awesome though? Like if you recorded boxing on ESPN because it had it on there, and they decided to switch stations, but your DVR actually recorded it. You know what I mean? Like it could go to the different stations and record. Wouldn't that be awesome? We need to work on that, dude. We need to work on that.
I couldn't let this show go by without blasting ESPN. That's pathetic.
What was that, Bede?
I said it's not the first time this has happened either.
That's what we were saying. No. We were saying it's hit by the Little League World Series and everything like that. So yeah. Insane. All right, let's go to 706. 706,
what's
going
on, guys?
Hey, what's up, man?
Chilling. What's up with people saying Fury won, man? It seems like it's really easy to brainwash British fans. Like once somebody starts saying something, the train starts rolling in England. Like it doesn't matter what really happened, but isn't that what's going on in England? Like Hugh Fury, did he win by any chance? Did anybody have him winning?
I think a few people had him winning. I mean, I know some people in the chat had him winning. I didn't have him winning. I don't think didn't have him winning.
I had it 116-112 for Parker.
He was just the aggressor.
And I'm a big Fury fan, but I couldn't find a way to give him more than 4 rounds. If I was going to be overly generous, maybe 5. I just didn't see it.
This is the only guy Mick Hennessy and them have left, so I think creating this drama was a way to get another fight, because if this guy's done Fury, they have nobody else really left, so this is smart on their part, keep their name in the news even if they lost, but try to create this fake scene and shit. And B, like you were saying, the round 7, there's no way that Golovkin lost that round, so why do you think, if you had to guess, why is he giving him the 7th round? Is that just he's just trying to cover, he knows what score he's going to give him even before the fight starts, he's just trying to get him around in there?
I'm lost for words. I don't know why. I just don't know why. I have no idea. I don't want to say that this is corruption. I don't want to say it, but it's the thought did enter my mind. I mean, I can't say that it's know, something's not fishy here. You know what I mean? It could. I mean, the seventh round, even Bird gave it to him. So I just don't know, man. I don't know.
Shouldn't you say it is? Shouldn't you say it is corruption? Because Oscar's been involved with plenty of fucking corruption in his career as a promoter and boxer, robbing Cornell Whitaker clear as fucking.
I can't prove it, so I don't. I mean, I could suggest that it is. You know, I don't really have hard evidence that you know it is corruption. Right. But again,
What about that Pernell Whitaker fight? How many rounds did Oscar win to you?
I thought that was a seven-five, 8-4.
I thought it was like 8-4. I had Whitaker winning that fight.
I did too.
Yeah.
So it's the same blueprint. It's the same blueprint. Like Oscar likes to talk about blueprints. I mean, it's the same blueprint. Lara won. I thought Lara won. I've seen plenty of videos. Lara landing the cleaner and more punches during pretty much six or seven rounds. I thought he won. So Canelo should really have three. Yeah, he should have three losses in reality. He should have three losses.
Yeah, that Trout fight I think was really close too. I mean, I can't argue against the draw in that fight or a slight Canelo win, but yeah.
Trout somehow keeps fights close.
I had the the Cotto fight 7-5 for Canelo, but I, you know, the judges scored that 118-110, 117-111 too. They had that fight was wide too.
Yeah. I had the Cotto Mayweather fight 8-4 for Mayweather. I don't know why people always say it was so close. That was another one that was kind of a doozy. I didn't think
I had that fight 8-4 too for Mayweather. Yeah.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, Daniel Jacobs and Eddie Hearn. Isn't it kind of like when DeGale left Eddie and Frampton left Eddie, and they both went to Hearn. I mean, both went to Heyman. I guess this is kind of like a welcome to America gift from Heyman to Eddie. Like, here, take him since you hooked me up with those guys. You know, you let them go, so here you can have one of my guys. That's what it kind of feels like to me. Start off his campaign in America because they always work together. Otherwise, yeah. There's no way he would just let him go without losing total control. I'm sure Heyman has some control, say so on fights and shit.
Like, Heyman's a promoter, though. He can be with any promoter he wants. Heyman's not a promoter.
That's smart. I think that's smart. But I think they should promote more. This is a Charlo Lubin card. I feel like there's zero fucking promotion. I still don't know what date it is.
October 14th.
Yeah, somebody just... Yeah, Igloo, that Igloo guy just told me in the comments, but they have zero promotion for that, and that's such a fucking good card. That's a better card than any fucking card that Golden Boy or Top Rank has put on ESPN to date. Any fucking card.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Isn't it? Has Golden Boy or Top Rank put a better card than that on ESPN yet?
Not yet.
No. Yep, and they were supposed to be the opposite of PBC. That's what Steve Kim's been fucking shoving down people's heads. Oh, they're going to be the opposite of PBC. Great matchup, great this, great that. Fucking piece of shit.
Well, I'll be interested to see what he says on the Friday night card.
And when Tank is like has a kind of a bad fight, even though he won, he's saying, "Oh, the Tank get exposed." And last night Valdez gets dropped, and he didn't look the best. And he's like, "Oh, well," he says, "Valdez is becoming must-watch TV." Like the total opposite. You can just see it in his tweets about Mayweather fighters and Top Rank off fighters. So imagine if Tank got dropped like Valdez, would he say? After that, he's must-watch TV, like he said about Valdez, you think?
That's okay. Valdez is going to go into Lions then, and he's going to have to deal with Carl Frampton and goodnight, Irene.
Yeah. Yeah. Think good so? Luck with that. Yeah, I think so. All right, man, we got to get running.
What?
Get out of here about 9 o'clock.
All right, go ahead. Thanks, guys.
Go ahead. Thanks for calling. Good call, as always. All right, let's move on to our news and rumors here. Our train wreck of the week. We started off with Beeb. It's time.
Brianna, you want to do the train wreck?
She said she's.
I'll do it.
Pain.
I'll do it. Hurry up! Come on, we got to get out of here at 9. Hurry up! Get in here.
She's got to get paid, son.
All right, thank you.
Beeb's gonna have to renegotiate her contract soon.
Oh, I'm kidding you. Get some good money to do the train wreck.
Gervonta Davis charged with aggravated assault. Gervonta Davis. faces assault charges resulting from an August 1st incident, according to a complaint filed in Baltimore's district court. Davis was charged with one count of each, first-degree assault, a felony, and second-degree assault. The charges were not filed by police, court records show. A man pressed charges with district court commissioner on August 3rd. The warrant was not served until this week. Davis was released Tuesday on a $100,000 unsecured property bond, the records show.
Whoa.
Yeah, right. Whoa. So what is that, 10 grand? That's how it goes, yeah? I believe so. If your bond is $100,000, I think you have to pay 10% of that. So it'd be
that's
like
right,
grand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry, you're correct.
Yeah, I'd still be in the jail.
So $100,000, that means you had to pay 10 grand.
I'd come get you, Eric. Don't worry about it.
No, I appreciate that, man.
Beep Industries, we have a...
That's why I rely on you guys, man.
We have an emergency fund at Beep Industries.
An emergency fund at Beep Industries. So there you go, man. Yeah, not looking good for Javonte Davis. He's looking like the next Adrian Broner. I was surprised when I heard this, man. I really was. I don't know what to make of it. I know that Floyd's wanted to move out to Las Vegas for a long time. He's wanted to move out of that Baltimore area, stuff like that. Davis doesn't want to, though. So, you know, hey, but if you're going to get in trouble, believe you me, I think him and Floyd are going to have a long talk about him moving out of there. Now, whether it takes or not, I don't know. But this can't be good news. Can't be good news for him, man. Star horse gets in trouble, so I don't know. The big news this week, man, Andre Ward retires from boxing. This week, Andre Ward announced his retirement from boxing. You can read the entire statement on ringsidereporter.com. I won't read it here. It's kind of lengthy. But thoughts on his retirement, man. No big money fights for him, man. We talked about Joseph Parker, not a big money fight for him. It's cool that if he wins the heavyweight title, but that's a link, man. That's a stretch. But Tony Bellew is not a big fight for him. The second Kovalev fight wasn't a big fight for him money-wise. Third Kovalev fight sure isn't going to be a big fight money-wise. He's already beaten him twice. What else does he need to prove? Listen, I know he won on the scorecards the first fight. We all know Kovalev. We thought Kovalev won the first fight.
I didn't.
Except Beeb, you're right. You picked Ward and you got him and you thought he won. I picked Ward. I thought he lost, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it still wasn't a big money fight. The second fight was not a big money fight. So there's nothing left for him. I mean, it really isn't. I mean, Triple G, he can't fight Triple G. He's too heavy for him. Can't go down in weight. Can't really go up in weight. There's nothing there for you. So I think he's picking the right time, man. You think he'll stay retired?
Yes.
You know, this is the thing. I think so because I don't think Stevenson was in a rush to fight him. So that would have been a hard time getting him in the ring to unify. He already beat the best guy in the division twice.
Yeah, Stevenson. Yeah, Stevenson's not getting moved.
What else was out there for him? He says his body was breaking down or whatever. Or I'm not going to say it was breaking down, but maybe he just didn't want to go through the training camps. He didn't want to keep beating up his body. I don't know the whole story behind that. But one thing I can strongly suspect was without a challenge out there, he probably had a hard time getting up to train. That's definitely, a possibility.
Listen, man, if you get up and you get yourself into training and you don't, you know, you're not 100% there, you got to get motivated. Yeah. If you're not jumping out of bed and motivated and everything, man, it's time to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's say the guys, he's already proven that he's a hell of a boxing analyst. I mean, that's what he's going to be doing. You know, if he wants to stay in the game, he's going to be a boxing analyst for somebody because he does a wonderful job of breaking down fights. He could replace Timothy Bradley. He could replace Roy Jones. I don't have a problem with Roy Jones, but you know, Andre Ward does a good job at that.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. No disrespect to Roy Jones. I like Andre Ward doing the commentary better than Roy Jones.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like Roy Jones, too.
You know, and we are very grateful to Andre Ward here over at Beep Industries, and I'll tell you why. We made a lot of money on that last fight because we also straddled it with the knockout proposition, like I suggested. When you guys were laughing your asses off, I had to peel you up off the ground. You were laughing so hard. Beep was laughing the following week because he bet Andre Ward straight, and as he suggested, little straddle with the knockout proposition, and we that was a pretty penny we made that time. Thank you, Andre Ward, for that.
All right, let's talk about some sad news this week, man. A career ended this week, man. I really do. A career ended this week as Daniel Jacobs signs with Matchroom Promotions and Eddie Hearn. So he pretty much just signed his career suicide death warrant with Eddie Hearn here.
Now, listen to
Beeb,
this.
Let me tell you this. Eddie Hearn is a complete wank.
We got
he
Anthony
ruined
Joshua
careers.
Showtime.
He
we
ruined
Kel Jacobs
Brook.
He we got that Kel Sky Brook. Deal. We got this boxing game on lock now. We're hitting all the switches. We got HBO, we got Showtime, we got Sky. I mean, what's next? Pretty soon, Eddie's gonna have an ESPN deal. Can't sleep on Eddie Hearn, baby.
Eddie Hearn is such
look, a look. The only thing I don't like about these deals. I mean, let's be honest here. It's 2017. It's the 21st century. Should boxers lock themselves into a network deal where their fights can only be shown on one network? I think those days are long gone, man.
All depends what fights are on the table. If I'm Danny Jacobson, I can get a Golovkin rematch, or I can get a Canelo fight. Those are two pretty pennies. Who am I going to get over, you know, if I'm fighting those guys at Showtime? What big fights am I going to get there?
I don't know.
Robbie said Eddie Hearn's the one, too. Right? Robbie
it
said
all
Eddie
depends
Hearn's
on the decision,
too.
Baby.
I just...
It all depends on the division. I meant to say. Excuse me. It all depends on the division. Now, if I'm a welterweight, I'm staying over at Showtime. But if I'm a middleweight, I wouldn't mind being an HBO fighter right now.
Okay. Beebe, if you're Mikey Garcia, do you stay at Showtime?
Yeah.
If you want the Lenoris fight?
I do, and I'll tell you why.
Doesn't need the Lenoris fight, though.
Doesn't need the Lenoris fight. Number one. And number two, who does Top Rank and who does HBO have at welterweight? And besides Crawford, who else do they have at 140? You know? That's the thing.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Eric.
What's Top Rank and HBO doing with Crawford? What's Crawford got?
Well, I think he's going to 147. That's what I think.
Well, they better give him that. If they don't give him that Pacquiao fight, then they have a hard time fighting Keith Thurman, Errol Spence.
I think he's gonna fight Horn myself. I think he's gonna take that title.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, he's not fighting Horn next, though. Sad news to report. Raging Bull, the Bronx Bull, Jake LaMotta, dies at 95. LaMotta passed away this week at the age of 95. He was the former middleweight champion of the world and best known for his fights with Sugar Ray Robinson. LaMotta passed away from complications of pneumonia. He said he fought Sugar Ray Robinson so many times, he's surprised he didn't have diabetes. So that was his big joke from way back when. So I'd like Jake LaMotta and Robert De Niro played.
Too. Good
movie, your favorite part of that movie, The Raging Bull? What's your favorite scene?
Oh, that's an easy one, man. At the end of the fight, man. At the end of the fight, Ray, never knocked me down, Ray.
You know what my favorite
never
scene
knocked
is?
Me down.
You know what my favorite scene is? Remember when he's at the table and she's cooking him dinner?
Yeah.
And he goes, he wants the steak, and he goes, bring it over here. Bring it over here. Overcooking, it defeats its own purpose.
It defeats
Bring
its own
it over
purpose.
Here. I fucking love that. Oh, I love that scene.
That's the best, man.
Oh, the best scene.
You never
Bring it over here.
You know what was unusual about that movie, guys, is it was made in 1980. Well, you know, most movies nowadays, including back then, were made in color. They purposely made that in black and white to show the time that he was fighting, because if his fights were shown on TV back then, they were always shown in black and white. So they made the movie in black and white.
Yeah. Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Very observant, Robbie. Very observant.
Yep. Yep.
We need to get Ted Turner in there to colorize that. More sad news this week. This happened a couple of weeks ago, from what I understand, man. David Bay, former heavyweight contender, fought Larry Holmes, was killed in a construction accident. He worked he worked construction, and apparently OSHA's looking into it or whatever. But, yeah, he was 60 years old, man. Was a, let me see, a representative from, he was in local 179, I guess, Regional Council of Carpenters, said they was a second generation pile driver who had worked 37 years in a trade, man. Yeah, that's awful, man. And they said he was such a super nice guy, and everybody had nothing but nice things to say about him and stuff like that. Great fighter, man. So very sad news, very sad news. All right, we're going to round it up. We're going to round it up. Georgie from the 5.
Hey, what's happening, people?
From this day, you'll be my new fool.
Save the best for last. I see you have your Hugie Fury T-shirt on this week. Go ahead.
Babe, your evilness no limits, buddy. No limits. Sad. Listen, bro.
I am very good friends with the Fury family, and even I scored it to Joseph Cosmo.
Listen, bro, the Fury got robbed, bro. I don't know what's going on. This must be the end of dates. It must be some type of Bible prediction, some type of fucking Armageddon, because I don't know what happened after the clips. All we see is fucking earthquakes, hurricanes, and now you guys saying that Fury didn't get robbed. What is next?
Georgie, I got bad news for you. Joseph Parker is going to have to deal with Anthony Joshua, and that party will be over.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going for Parker. Don't get me wrong. I was going for Parker. I thought Fury was doing an excessive amount of holding. When in the previous fight, a guy got up on the doctor, like on the third round, right out of the gate, and Fury didn't even get a warning. That was inexplicable. I just cannot figure that one out. But that being said, I mean, Fury made Parker miss mad punches. And, yeah, Parker, yeah, caught him here and there. But, man, Fury got robbed. I cannot see. What was your score again, Beavs?
I had it 116 and 112 for Joseph Parker. I gave Fury 4 rounds.
You give Fury 4 rounds?
Correct.
Well, good. That's another soul mystery going down into history. We're going to have to leave that one like that. But, you know, for the most part, I just don't see it. I guess we're going to have to disagree. We need some type of way to score this fight. Because this is the problem. The problem is that the effective aggression part. That means so much for so many people. If we don't go with the punches landing and quality of the punches, we lost. We definitely lost. Everything after that just don't mean anything. I mean, I saw clearly Fury land when he wanted to land and avoid getting hit a lot. I don't say he didn't get hit because he did get hit and he did lose round. But for the most part, man, that could have been easy 6-7 round Fury just to make him do miss silly. I just don't get it. Well, you guys got this man winning. I'm just going to have to leave like that. But just to get over that, because I know you guys got to go home. I mean, do your thing, you know, in the show. But I want to talk about Luke Campbell's. When I see Luke Campbell, I see Algeria 2.0. Pillow hands. I don't see, like, why boxing fan to have any type of faith in this man. I mean, he probably going to end up with, like, a Paulie Man and Nagy sort of record. Maybe grab a couple of belts from Mini Mini Mo, a couple, you know, belt holders that nobody even know who Paulie got those fucking titles from, you know? That type of, is this man really worth the investment of watching him? Because power is not on his side. He's seeing that speed is not on his side. He already is a big dude for the weight division, so he's moving up eventually in his career. He seemed like that type of stock that you don't want to invest on. So what's your guys' take on Campbell? What's going on with this man? I just don't want to waste time with him.
I like him too, man. I like him a lot. I picked him to win the fight. I thought he was going to beat him.
George, I think you're wrong about that. I think Luke Campbell has a bright future. It was a competitive fight, and had he not got knocked down on my scorecard, he would have won. You know?
Might have been a little
wow, Roby. This is crazy.
We had it 6-6 in rounds.
Fight was very close. Yeah, fight was very close.
I saw an ass whipping from round one. I'm sorry, guys, but if you guys saying that Parker landed the hottest shot, everything that Jorge threw at this man was hard shot. From jab to right hand landing at will, everything was hard. Campbell hits with pillow hands. It's like he's there with a duster and dusting furniture with a feather thing, you know? It's just I don't see it, man. If you land a combo, because this is how I score cards. If I don't see if you guys land the same right hand and the other guy's right hand is better and harder, man, that's the man winning the round because he's hot, landing the hottest punches.
Can I explain one thing? This is a misconception.
Yes, sir.
There's no doubt about it that Linares hits harder than Kim. But the thing is this. Campbell was still landing some good shots, some clean shots. You know what people watch sometimes? When they see a guy who has really fast hands, and he throws punches and he throws combinations, he could be landing similar combinations that his opponent is landing. And maybe his opponent's not as fast. His shots don't look as flashy. So automatically we say, oh, that guy's shots are better. They're more effective. They're cleaner. I'm going to say this. Campbell landed clean shots last night too. And, you know, they may not have been as quick or as flashy as Linares is. His combinations weren't as, faster. They didn't come off as probably smooth. But he was still putting shots together. He was still landing clean, quality shots. But his shots just don't look as flashy as Linares. So do we give Linares extra credit for that? Now, Linares did win the fight. But the fight was still competitive. The way I think you got a little bit swayed by the speed and the flashiness of Linares, and maybe emphasis on that. Because that was the same thing when Pacquiao fought Jeff Horn. Now, Jeff Horn, obviously, his work is not going to be as clean and smooth as Pacquiao's. So people were so focused on how Pacquiao's hands were faster, his shots were cleaner. But, that still doesn't take away from the fact that Jeff Horn was still landing punches and he was still outworking Pacquiao in spots in that fight. Just because his shots don't look as pretty as Manny Pacquiao's, they're not as flashy, that it's not as eye-appealing. I think people get swayed by that. I really do.
Baby, but I'm not talking about speed and looking flashy. I'm talking about brutal power. Like, if nobody's seen Campbell ever fight before, and you show 20 boxing fans, they're going to tell you the thing. I believe 90% of boxing fans going to tell you, listen, this man got no pop. This man got no pop.
Yeah.
He got 10 knockouts. He got.
Yeah.
Huh?
He's not a one hitter quitter type guy. There's no question about that. I mean, you do have a point there.
If you got no pop, I mean, if you can't hurt your opponent and your opponent dropping you, chasing you around the ring, I mean, baby, it's clear as day. I don't see this close fight. This is a problem that I see. I've seen this a lot in YouTube. It was a close fight. No, it was no close fight. There was a winner, Jorge won clear as day. Anybody insinuated that Campbell could have a decision there, baby, have to be some type of bias. Because this man could even hurt him. He didn't even bother him. I didn't see Jorge not even blinking from this man's shots. Not even blinking. And every time Jorge hit this man on his bicycle and making sure, even when you listen, like you don't supposed to listen to the commentary, but when you listen on the corner, when they focus the camera on the corner, you seen the Cuban dude. I was listening to the Cuban dude. He was, his training, he was like in emergency mode. He was like, yo, be first, move your leg, move. They knew the dude was getting beat. They knew it clear as day. And when I see people, because we call this a close fight, then boxing is dead. If that's a close fight, then anything is close. Then whatever these mafia said, then it will go. If we got that fight, which is as clear as day, that Jorge whip him, then I don't know what to say, bro. Then this is something so wrong with boxing that it's just, it's laughable.
I mean, you can take umbrage with that 115-113 card for Campbell. I don't think that Campbell won the fight, but I had Lara's winning this fight 114-113. I had it real close. I'm gonna be honest.
But it cannot be that close, baby. It cannot. We said detrimental boxing. Calling that fight specifically close,
Eric,
is messed up.
Did you score the fight last night?
I didn't actually score the fight, but I watched the fight, and I had Linares winning, but it was a very close fight.
Yep. Okay.
Well, I guess majority rules, and my argument hold no water, so I'm going to have to agree with you guys. It was a close fight. Thank you. Thank you for the show. You guys are always on the positive, you know, on the positive thing. Love you guys. You guys, you know, have a great week coming up tomorrow Monday. Love you.
Okay. Thanks for the call as always, and thank you for your support.
We stayed on late for Georgia, and we stayed on late.
You could have this 116-111. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. You could have had it a little wider from Linares. Some of the rounds were close.
Yeah.
They really were.
And that's how much we love Georgie. We said we were going to be out of here at 9. We took his call. That's how much we love Georgie on this show. There you go. That'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert. Or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 917-259-1810. Leave him a message. You can catch Joe Habib on Twitter at jhabib1. Find his YouTube channel at beatingtheoddswithbeeb.com. I'm at Ringside73, and we'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.